Olga Bank of San Diego, California is trying rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Awful. Burning and couldn't stand it.
A different kind of Ovaltine.
It really does take care of the itch.
I never tried Ovaltine before.
Mike Tilson of Jonesboro, Georgia is trying Triple Action Gold Bond medicated powder.
It's got great chocolatey taste. Well, I was surprised.
Especially between my toes.
Chocolatey taste is excellent.
And then it just feels really comfortable.
Rich chocolate Ovaltine. The medicating action of a proven itch fighter. Its great taste will surprise you.
That's good.
It really does take care of the itch.
Try Triple Action Rich Chocolate Gold Bond medicated Ovaltine.
It really works.
Use only as directed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
See, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
And away we go.
Indeed we do.
I believe this is the 800,000 episode. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
I've lost track years ago. How you doing, Lisa Foster?
I'm good, Pat Cashman, if that really is your real name.
It's not my real name, but it's the one I've been using for a long, long time.
Yeah, it works.
When I first got into radio, it never occurred to me to use a fake name. Some guys' names, you know, they're just like, his name is Leonardo Zambrosowski or something, and that's not a good DJ name, so you got to come up with something short. A lot of there were a lot of Sunny Beaches, Lance Boyle. I mean, I don't know all these. You wanted your name to be short and pithy and memorable.
Yeah.
And but I thought, you know, my name's that's good enough. It's short. And it never occurred to me to create another name, except I did do that briefly out of college. I wanted to get into radio, and I figured after college and got a college degree, I'm going to get hired by a whole bunch of people. I'll be able to turn down offer after offer. Of course, it never occurs to you that you have zero experience actually doing anything. You have no genuine, you know, resume sample reel that you can send to prospective employers. So I just finally had to tuck my tail between my legs and come back to my hometown of Bend, Oregon, because there was a radio opening there. But there were only two stations in Bend at that time. There's a station called KBND. Call letters are still intact. And that station played music like Andy Williams, the Ray Conniff Singers, a bunch of kind of music that your parents would listen to. The other station in town was the cool station. It was called KGRL, K-Girl. I know I've told this story before. That was the cool station. They played the Beatles. They played Creedence Clearwater Revival. That's where you wanted to be. But yeah. I had to be on the Fody Doty station, so I assumed a fake name.
So
Can
I stop you there?
Yeah, okay.
Yes, master.
So I'm assuming because there was an opening on the Fuddy Duddy station, it was because the other guy, somebody died.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Probably. That's probably
okay.
Right.
Yeah. So they said, hey, somebody's died. We have an opening. Who wants it? All right, now continue.
Let's put this young guy on. He should be good for at least 10 or 20 years.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
So I went to work there, but I used a fake name.
Because?
And it was like Johnny Cool. I can't remember exactly.
Oh, God.
I did it because I thought if any of my old friends are listening to the station, they'll go, oh, listen to Cashman. He's on the Fody Doty station. I thought I could fool them by using a fake name.
I do like those old, you know, like Jack Diamond.
Yeah.
In the morning, and you know, Axel Blade in the morning, or
Bobby Steele.
That's right, Bobby Steele.
Come on. Steele's good.
You know, I had when I first met you, I was a traffic reporter. I don't know why I stumbled on that. I was a traffic reporter here in Seattle.
Painful memory.
And actually, I have to tell you, traffic reporting on the air, don't take this the wrong way, but it was one of my favorite on-air jobs. I loved working with you. love co-hosting with you, but the pressure of being on a show because of ratings could do you in. They never fired the traffic reporter. Traffic reporter was, and it was fun. It didn't matter. All you had to do was report the traffic. You don't have to be cute. You don't have to have good content. You know, I mean, just do the thing. And so I loved it. Let
me tell people how this works. Now, you work for a company that did traffic reports, not just for a single station, but for all the stations in the market.
Correct.
Right? So you had to juggle, I don't know how many stations, three and four at a time, something like that?
Six. I had up to six stations, including King TV with Dennis Bounds in the morning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did traffic on his thingy, too.
So you have to kind of, and you use different names for
yes,
yourself?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I had just a variety of different names, and the reasoning is that the station still wanted to have your name associated with their call letters because that all made sense when they were vying for ratings. So they didn't want my name on a different station and to be associated with, so I had to come up with all these fake names.
So that's like a lot to keep in mind.
Like Bob Diamond. I wish I would.
Yeah, that's a lot to keep in mind. You got to keep the name straight. Oh, wait, now I'm on this station, so I'm Henrietta Jenkins on this station. But you were Lisa Foster on my show, so that was easy for me.
I remember the GM when they when they started realizing that I was, you know, doing some other very popular stations out there. I was on, you know, KJR and KISW and The End and all these other ones. They're like, you can't use your name on any other station. So, you guys got me. And
then you also had to remember what stations they were, what formats they were, this is Cashman's station, so I got to act stupid on this one to match him.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I do have to say,
and I had everything on flip cards, so I had a little index card that was on a ring sort of a binder thingy. Yeah. So I would just flip it, you know, and I'd be like, and that's your traffic. I'm Lisa Foster for King 1090 or whatever it was. And there'd be occasions that I'd be like, who the hell am I? What station am I on? Because I would do up to six reports per hour sometimes. And I have horrible nightmares about it. Horrible nightmares still. My stress dreams are, I don't know what station I'm reporting the traffic on. Nobody will, the computers won't work. So I don't even know what traffic problems there are. I just make them up. I just pull them out of my ass. I'm like, well, I'm sure there's a backup on 520 because there always is. And I go with that.
Traffic in the city turning my head around. No, 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 no. Back up on the freeway. Back up in the chase. Everywhere you look, there's a commotion. Get gone. Commotion. Get gone.
That is my stress dream that I have now. I don't know who I am, and I don't know what the traffic is.
That's pretty much a stress dream everybody has, Lisa, when you think about it. Who am I? Why am I here? And your traffic headquarters was in the top floor of the tallest building in Seattle. I always thought, before I got into it myself, that, they were up on the top of this building because they could see all the traffic up there.
On Saturday night, when our work is done, we load up music up on the run, every traffic heavy traffic ahead. We got to ramble, heavy traffic ahead.
Yeah, we were actually on the 73rd floor, the observation deck.
Yeah.
So we were in, the observation deck was sort of a circle, and we were in the middle, and we had glass enclosures, and so when visitors to Seattle would go up to the observation deck, they would all stare at us, and it was like, stop staring at me.
Like
so,
going to the zoo.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you could have just been in a small room in the back loading dock area of a Walmart. You didn't have to be up 73 floors, but it was kind of cool for you, I guess. You had a nice view.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal.
Let's get to it here. Here's some quick passings. I don't know how quick they actually passed, but this guy, even if you're not into jazz music, You probably heard of the name Sonny Rollins. He was a jazz tenor saxophonist, died at 95, and just kind of a legendary figure in the world of jazz. He did all kinds of music, jazz, rock, fusion, avant-garde, all kinds of styles.
One of the best jazz musicians of his time, Rollins won 2 Grammys and a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in the early 2000s. He toured well into his 80s and died at his home in Woodstock, New York, after years of health issues.
Now, in the late 1940s, when he was getting underway, most jazz sax guys played a light tone on the tenor sax. But not Sonny Rollins. He went bigger, he went fuller, and he played with ferocious energy. Some people say he was the greatest living jazz improviser of them all. And then in 1959, right at the peak of his career, he just abruptly quit for 2 years. And they said, "Well, what's going on?" He said, "I'm just not that happy with my music right now. I got to work on it and think it over a little bit." 2 years later, he came roaring back, and again, he has just passed at the age of 95. Sonny Rollins. And then a man who is called the God of American Auctioneers. Not me. No, this guy's name is John Marion, 92 years old. He worked largely with Sotheby's, and he was an art auctioneer.
Oh, Sotheby's is very she-she. I mean,
I know. So he didn't have to talk like a cattle auctioneer. Wasn't about his speed. It was about his ability to kind of persuade people, cajole them into buying these famous paintings. He sold the diamond that Richard Burton bought for Elizabeth Taylor in 1969. That baby was supposed to be 70 carats. Jeez. And sold for, at that time, a record $1 million. But he sold, you know, stuff from Gauguin and Picasso, all these famous paintings, huge prices.
Le Portail Soleil, Claude Monet, $13,500,000 against you.
Hey, well, all right, sir, here we go there. What are they going to give for him? I'm at $600 down here now, $10 and now, $25 and now, $35 and now, the $50 now, $60. Will they give me $60 now, $75, another $85?
Did very well for himself as well. John Marion was 92.
Will they give me $60 now, $75, now, $85, now, $95, $100, now, $25, now, $50, $75, now, $2, now, $3, now, $4, now, $5, now, $6, now, $7, now, $8.
And this guy passed away. He's a rapper. Rob Bass, 59 years old, he had cancer. But he's best known for this song, It Takes Two. Rolling Stone said this is the greatest use of a loop in rap music history. I don't even know what that means exactly. But It Takes Two came out in 1988. They say it was the best drum break in rap history, I guess I should say. And you'll hear this song a lot. They played it at ballparks, for example. Whenever there's a double play, it's time for It Takes Two. Then in the world of car racing, NASCAR's kind of their Babe Ruth, if you will, of star drivers, Kyle Busch, known as Rowdy Busch, passed away. He was only 41 years old.
Well, he cut that corner off and put those left side tires right down on the edge of the apron again here in three.
And he had 234 cumulative victories. Nobody's even close to that.
Carl hasn't been able
in the
to
world
pass
of NASCAR. But people who worked around him and competed against him found him irritating. He was always pissed off about something. And unpleasant to be around sometimes, and he would mock the audience and what have you. Very tempestuous personality, but a great racer. He apparently had a sinus cold that was made worse by the G-forces of driving as fast as he did, and then in different venues there would be great changes in elevation the next day where he might race someplace else. So it's a combination of things. They're not really sure what took him, but he passed away. Kyle Busch, 41 years old.
After 2000 came 2001. 2001
to be the new champions. We were there for too long. From springtime in Arizona till fall in Monterey. And the raceways were the battlefields of fall away.
And finally, Lisa Foster, this one would be close and dear to your heart. A man who co-created a wonderful toy, Greg Hyman was his name. Not sure of his age, but he was the co-creator of the Tickle Me Elmo doll.
That tickles.
The doll that giggled and it spoke and it vibrated. This appeared in 1996, and as you may recall, it was huge. They produced 400,000 of these Tickle Me Elmo dolls intended for Christmas sales. They sold all of those out before it was even Thanksgiving. It was just huge. And that's his masterpiece, the Tickle Me Elmo doll.
We had a Tickle Me Elmo giveaway on our show because it was such a huge... I mean, people were killing each other for them practically.
Hoo-yah! Hoo-yah! Hoo!
I know there are incidents all over the United States where people were getting trampled and punched, and it's crazy. I never understood that mentality.
Yeah, all of the spirit of Christmas just to be the person who gets the Tickle Me Elmo, which, But I remember it was a big deal that we had one. I don't know how we got it, but we had one to give away on the show, and it was like, good Lord, people lost their minds.
I was listening to the radio the other day, and it's an oldies station, and they played this song by Nilsson.
No, I can't forget this evening, or your face as you were leaving, but I guess that's just the way the story goes.
Without You. You remember this one?
Mm-hmm.
Well... this, I don't know when this came out, but I had a girlfriend at the time. Terrific gal. Funny,
you know,
smart.
Can I stop you? You've had a lot of girlfriends.
No, I haven't. No, every, I've had...
almost every podcast, you have a story about a girlfriend. Is this the same girl?
Probably it is. I do... I kind of do a fusion of different girlfriends. Not that I had that many, but... This particular, she was smart, she was funny, really a good writer, very sweet, etc. But she could not hold a song in a bucket.
Can't live if living is without you.
And every time this song, we'd be driving in my car, and this song would come on. And then she would feel compelled to sing along with it.
Can't live if without you.
It just drove me nuts, Lisa. It would grate on me. I never said anything. Sometimes I'd make an excuse like, oh, I think I heard there's some breaking news. Let's go to the news station. And I'd punch the button on my radio, car radio.
Wow.
Just to get out of the song and stop her. I said, oh, no, I was just coming to the chorus. No, that's fine. I don't know why I'm even bringing it up, but when I heard that song on the radio a couple of days ago again, it made me shiver.
Yeah, you had a trauma flashback.
I really did. Speaking of shows, speaking of music, I'm watching a show that's been on for a couple of years now. Won all the Emmys, I think. It's on HBO Max, and it's called The Pitt. Are you familiar with this?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's familiar. Where have you been?
Well,
Where have you been?
I've been here, but I don't... I saw this thing's got 15 episodes a season.
Noah Wiley just won an Emmy this year for his portrayal. He's fantastic.
He's the star of the show, a Dr. Robbie, as he's called, but he's also executive producer of the show. It's really his baby, this show. I think he was on the TV show ER before that. And then this became like a passion project, an idea of his. And The Pit is 15-hour episodes. That comprises the season, as you know, Lisa. And it is supposed to be roughly 15 hours in an actual day at this fictitious hospital in Pittsburgh.
And it's not even 7.
Robbie's working the shift, by the way. Cut him a little slack today. It's the anniversary of Dr. Adamson's death.
Who left this mess?
That's like a little challenge every now and then.
We've got some new faces with us today. Hi, come on over.
I'm so happy to be here.
Talk to me at the end of the day.
Leon?
Forceps.
Full suction.
Are we ready to call this?
...150,000 people die every day in the world. Today you got one of them. And we're gonna get more of them before the shift is over.
Tier 1 trauma now!
4 of morphine, I'm gonna stop the bleeding.
You learn to accept it, find balance.
You found balance?
No, not even close.
When they do surgery, they're showing you putting the blade in and opening people up, and it can get kind of intense, especially if you're not in the profession. My wife was a surgical nurse, so this is like going home for her. What does that mean? What does that term mean? And she'll tell me. She's really good at it. Even
one of my favorite actresses on here is Bryan Cranston's daughter.
Oh, really?
And yeah, her Taylor Dearden. She's the gal with the glasses, very,
yeah.
She's a little awkward and but very smart. And she just plays this role beautifully. Yeah, that's Bryan Cranston's daughter. I mean, she got it. She definitely got her dad's acting chops. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, she's great. She's kind of new at the hospital game, and she's very emotional. She gets wrapped up in people's traumas and things in a way that I think if you continue as a doctor and a nurse, you have to eventually get to more objectivity in these things, or I don't think you could function. Oof.
Yeah. When I was a little girl, I thought I was going to grow up and be a veterinarian. And I'm like, that is the worst job I could ever have. I'm far too emotional. And even when I bring my dog, I had to bring Sherman in for a pretty severe ear thing going on with him. And even her telling me what's going on, I started to tear up. It's just an ear. It's a Cocker Spaniel ear. And I'm, is he going to be okay? I would never be a good veterinarian.
But I do think that it's people's love of animals that steers them towards that profession. I mean, I think you want to be an animal lover to be an animal fixer. But it would be tough. I agree with you. I don't think I could do it. But this all led me to this thing I ran across. It's not new, but these are quotes taken from actual medical records as dictated by physicians. I'll read you a few of these. And these are actually dictated by physicians, and they're in people's official records. By the time he was admitted, his rapid heart had stopped, and he was feeling better. Patient has chest pain if she lies on her left side for over a year. So you see what they've done there. They've transposed sentences out of order there. Right. On the second day, the knee was better, and on the third day, it had completely disappeared. The patient has been depressed ever since she began seeing me in 1983. The patient is tearful and crying constantly. She appears to be depressed. Here's a note. The patient refused an autopsy. The patient expired on the...
What could that possibly even mean? I mean, there's not even...
I'm assuming it might have been like a family member who somebody's died and they said, we don't want to have an autopsy. But
or maybe the patient refused an appendectomy or something. Maybe, I mean...
That could have been that. Yeah, it could have been that. And finally, when she fainted, her eyes rolled around the room. I was at the cemetery recently because it was Memorial Day. I wasn't I wasn't actively
participating
in being a member of that cemetery, but I was visiting, my parents and a brother, and leaving flowers. Got a lot of relatives in that place, I'll tell you.
And are they military? Do you have a military family?
Yeah, my dad served in World War II. One year I went there, and there's the VFW, I believe it is. They go around and put these tiny American flags on every gravesite that includes a veteran.
I love that.
Or a veterinarian, like you might have been.
Sure.
But every year we would go out to the cemetery. I'd usually go with a couple of my brothers. There would be a local older woman there that said the same thing every year. She said, oh, here come the Cashman boys. Huh, I didn't know you guys were out here. I didn't hear any police sirens. Said the same thing every year.
That's hilarious.
Well, she liked it, apparently.
That's funny.
So she reminded us that, and I don't ever think this is justified, but she reminded us that we were considered, if not troublemakers in town, we were unpredictable practitioners of mischief, shall we say.
That's a great way to say that. That is a masterful use of words right there, sir.
Well, all we did was weird stuff. We weren't hurting anyone. But I started thinking about this, and I thought, I guess she's right. We kind of were oddballs.
You guys now, were kind of the Dennis the Menaces, sort of level of...
Not that level of vandalism and destruction, but no, we just kind of... I have four brothers. I'm the oldest. And so when my parents would try to get out of town for a little while, I can't believe the chaos they had to put up with. Just to get away from us was vacation. They could have gone to the house next door and just stayed there a couple of days. As long as we didn't know they were there, they would have been happy. But when they would go out of town, it fell to Pat, the oldest, to be the ersatz babysitter for these guys.
Which is you, for those who don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, that's me.
I can't imagine why they put you in charge, but do go on.
Well, I remember my mom got this barrel full of clothes one day, and it came in this big cardboard barrel, a barrel like a trash can shape, but it had clothing inside of it. And it had a metal top on it that could lock into place. She said, so once you got the clothes out of there, she said, yeah, if you kids want to play with this, you can. Thanks, Mom. So when they were out of town, we decided we're going to give ourselves rides in this barrel. And so we would, because we lived on a slope. And so we'd push this barrel down this grassy slope. And then we would stop it before the grass ended, because if it kept going, then you would go down into my mom's multi-leveled terraces with plants and things. And finally, you would land into a neighbor's driveway. If you rode it that far.
Okay. Can I stop you?
Yeah.
So you've got somebody at the top.
Yeah.
You've got somebody who is
inside, the barrel,
and then somebody at the bottom.
Exactly. At least three of us are involved.
Oh, at least three of you. Okay. Yeah,
you need the guy in the barrel, the guy pushing the barrel, and then the guy catching the barrel.
The bottom. Okay, I understand.
At the end of the ride.
Can I ask one more question?
Certainly.
Did you put the lid on?
Oh, yeah. No, the lid is on. You're locked in there. You can't get out.
I can't even stand how funny this is.
It was fun. We thought it was fun.
What's wrong with you?
So we put our brother Sean into the barrel. We've done this several times. We know what we're doing by now.
Oh, okay.
Sean's turn for a ride. Okay. So he gets inside. We get him in there. He's got to squeeze to get in there. You know, it's about the height of a trash can. So it's a tight fit, but we were kids. And then we put the lid on and locked it into place. So the barrel is lying on its side now, ready to roll. You ready to go, Sean?
Yep, I'm ready to go.
All right, here we go. And we push it. And the brother downwind, the guy that's supposed to catch the barrel, it gets away from him somehow.
Roll out the barrel.
Khan crashes past him, goes down those terraces, ka-dunka, 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 ka-dunka. And the neighbors had just brought in a big pile of rocks for landscaping.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the barrel crashes into those rocks and comes to a sudden, abrupt halt. And we go running down there, the rest of my brothers and I. And we immediately are telling each other, Sean's dead. He's got to be dead. That's the most horrible crash I've ever seen. Guys have got to be a goner. Boy, are mom and dad going to be mad.
Right.
We get down there. We open the lid of the barrel, expecting the worst. Sean falls out of it, and he is laughing his bottom off. He's laughing so hard. Hey, that was really fun. I want to do it again.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Maybe his brains were jambled in writing down.
Roll it out, let's do the beer barrel.
But that was an example of the kind of mischief we would get into, not intending to hurt anybody. It just, some kids and a lot of adults too, and even presidents of the United States, they don't think things through before they
right.
do them. You know, they do them and then they consider what they've done later.
But you're right. Kids do silly things. We had a shed up in the field. I grew up in Napa, California, in a very rural area. And there was a shed up in the cow pasture that was just an old shed, but it had a sloped roof. So it wasn't a flat roof. It was just on an angle. And so the game we would play, it's so stupid. The game would be to see who could jump from the highest pitch of the roof. So you'd get on the roof, and then the very lowest part wasn't very far off the ground, and you'd hop off there, and then everybody would have to hop off.
Did you have a landing area, like sawdust or something?
It was just weeds and bush. It was in the cow pasture. It was just weeds and stuff. So then the next.
There are a lot of brown pillows in a cow pasture. Did you ever think about that?
Yeah, and then you'd go up another step until whoever could last without knocking all the air out of them. I only got up to three pitches, and I'm like, I'm out. I'm out. But it was stupid. We could have broken a leg. We could have had a concussion. We could have, fallen in a cow pie. It was just dumb. Kids are dumb.
Yeah, we're dumb. And we stay that way in some cases. Me, for example. So I don't know if it was the same occasion, but a nearer occasion when my parents again decided they were going to go out of town and they're going to leave me in charge. So I can remember.
I just don't know why they keep thinking that's a good idea.
I remember my mom had this large stack of newspapers sitting on the kitchen table.
Oh,
it must have been a foot high. I don't know why she saved newspapers. That was in the days before people recycled things. I just think she thought, I'm going to go back through all these newspapers and cut out recipes or articles that I find interesting. She'd get way behind. So she had this big stack of newspapers. And my brothers and I are just sitting around. Maybe I'm reading a book. The other brother's doing something else. We're not really paying any attention. And finally, I look up, and that stack of newspapers is on fire. I mean, it is a roaring blaze. I believe it was Sean, again, who decided, hey, Mom left these matches here. I think I'll light. And he lit it on fire. And we don't know what to do. We throw a blanket over it, and we finally put it out. Made a little burn mark in the wooden kitchen table, which we tried to rub out. So that same day, one of my other brothers, let's call him Stan got really mad at me. He, you know, I think he just didn't like authority. I was pushed into that authoritarian role, whatever it was. He was really mad at me. And so I said, oh, get out of here. We're lying in the living room of our house watching television. And I said, get out of here. Go on. And so he leaves the room and we continue watching television. All of a sudden, Lisa, Stan bursts back into the room, and he has gone into the kitchen and found the largest butcher knife my mom has. This sucker is a foot long.
Wow.
And he's brandishing it, and as they say in old-time literature, He fell upon me. He was serious about stabbing me. And I caught his hand like they do in the movies, you know, before it was going to just stab into my face. And I'm holding it there. My other brothers wrestle him off of me. And my mom and dad never found out about that incident. And I never turned my back on Stan ever again. And I tried not to piss him off anymore, too.
Smart.
So then that same weekend, we're outside. I mean, the evidence is mounting that we are not good. So we go outside and we find there's a dirt pile and there's a bunch of dirt clods in it. And so we start throwing dirt clods at each other from a guy could be like 20 feet away and I'll throw a dirt clog and maybe he'll bounce off of his back of his shoulder or something. We're all getting dirt clods thrown at us.
You guys are so stupid.
And one of us throws a dirt clod at Stan, and Stan didn't see it coming, and it hits Stan right in the face.
Some come up and some come down. If you love the gift of time, I sit down, get down, feel the sun. Rocket to the woman is out the one. Well, I like dirt, well, I like dirt, well, I like dirt.
And it was a dirt clod that was actually contained a rather good-sized stone inside of the dirt, which we didn't bother to check for. So it hits Stan right in the side of his face, right side, I think. And he is bleeding like a stuck hog. And it's a horrible wound. And so I rally everybody together as we're trying to band-aid Stan. And I say, look, you guys, if mom and dad come home and find out about this and they see Stan, they are going to flip. And I'm probably going to be put on a train and driven to another country. And we're all going to be in huge trouble. Even Stan here, who was the victim, he's going to be in trouble because we all participated in the dirt clod thing together.
That's very smart. You should have grown up to be an attorney. That's very smart. Implicating everybody in the crime.
I tried to persuade them. Of course, the guilty party was me, but because I'm in charge after all. So here's what we thought we would do, because we knew the parents were coming home in a couple hours. This was my plan. Stan, when mom and dad come in, we'll all say, hey, mom and dad, but never look directly at them.
Right.
Just show them the good side of your face. And because there's so many of us, they're probably not going to scrutinize you in particular. So, and we thought we could get away with that, and that we could go for weeks until Stan's face finally healed up. Well, the parents come home. Hi, mom and dad. Hey, hi, kids. How's it going? Oh, my God, Stan, what happened to you? Instantly, she saw it. My mom.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And so every horrible thing that happened to us that I was worried would happen did happen. We were. I was the last time I was the babysitter, in fact.
I was fired. Came to their senses.
From my unpaid position. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how many listeners know that these stories are entertaining to me no matter how many times I hear them, but yeah, because I was an only child. Yeah. So I never had the only trouble I would get into would be with whatever the neighborhood kids were up to. And even then that was rough because we didn't live in the city. We lived in
the sticks.
It was a very rural sticks area. So I wasn't around other kids too often, but yeah.
So you had no choice but to be good.
No, I didn't have the leverage you had. I was only had myself to blame if I got in trouble. It was always me. I couldn't go, yeah, but nope. It was like, nope, you're right. That was me.
Then I told you the story of how my mom kept her washer and dryer down in the basement of our house. And she would go down there and that's where the clothes would be washed and dried. So the washer was one of those with the glass, the round glass on the front. And
I have one of those.
Yeah, my brother and I thought that looks like a TV set. And so somehow or other, we persuaded my brother Mike to crawl inside the washing machine. And then I closed the door so he could be on TV. He could pretend like he's on TV. Of course, his face is sort of squashed up against the screen, but he's in there okay. And we just thought, that's cool, Mike. You look like you're on TV. This is really cool. And then I thought, I'll be right back. I got to go do something. I think I had to go to the bathroom or something. Well, I forgot he was in there, Lisa.
Oh, man.
The guy's in there for over an hour. is the one who discovered him when she went down to do the laundry. So,
poor mother.
This is all exhibit A of that we really were kind of rotten kids. Not evil, just stupid. A friend of mine that grew up, he's just exactly my same age. He grew up in Yakima, Ellensburg area. And he was telling me about a kid show host they had on a TV station called KIMA. Over in Yakima, Washington. They did not receive Seattle stations, so they couldn't watch kid shows like J.P. Patches and Stan Borison. All kinds of, every station had a kid show host.
Yeah, well, we had Diver Dan, we had Romper Room, we had all sorts of different things
everybody had a local Romper Room woman, too, that's right. Romper Room was a kind of a syndicated format that was done all over the country. Yeah. But KIMA TV in Yakima had their own kid show host, too. It was a guy named Jim Nolan, but he called himself Uncle Jimmy. And, you know, it was the usual thing. He'd play cartoons. Maybe kids would come in, a handful of kids from the second grade somebody's middle school, and they'd come in and be on the show. Uncle Jimmy was the kid show host. Well, and a lot of people don't know this, but the guy that played J.P. Patches, a guy named Chris Weedus, that wasn't his full-time job. When he wasn't doing the kid show host on Cairo TV, he would work at Cairo as a floor director, or he'd do other sorts of chores around the TV station. Uncle Jimmy was the same way. He had to do the news as well. So he's a kid show host for a while, then he's the newsman at the station. Mm. And it's one of those stations that was so budget conscious, they didn't have any money to pay people, so you had to wear a whole bunch of different hats. And not only did he do the news, this guy Jimmy, but he also had to run his own cameras. So the cameras would be fixed as he's reading the news, and as soon as he tosses to a news story or goes to a commercial, he leaps out of his anchor chair and runs around and readjusts all the camera.
Wow.
Crazy.
What kind of a role do you think Uncle Jimmy's Clubhouse played in the community in the infancy of TV?
Oh, I don't know.
Did you have to ever do anything like that in the broadcasting realm, but that you weren't really qualified to do, and suddenly found yourself in a semi-panic situation?
No, but I have stress dreams about that all the time that I'm in a situation, I'm broadcasting, I don't have the news. I just that's kind of my stress dream. I don't have the news. I don't have the reports and I just wing it.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. Right.
As we wrap up, I know I've been all over the place, but one of the things we used to do on our radio show, which I did because I thought it was funny. It was funny to me. I didn't know if it was going to be funny to the general audience. Maybe that's why I got fired. I don't know. But the idea was I used to be amused at shows like Howard Stern's and a few other practitioners before there was a video component. It was just a radio show. And Howard, for example, would bring in people. He'd bring in strippers into the studio. And then they'd supposedly have doffed all their clothes. And, oh, boy, you look pretty good. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, kind of I'm sure they did. I'm sure that was real.
Well, that thing just seemed absurd to me. It's radio. It's like doing card tricks on the radio. And you can't see it. So it suggested it's the sound of somebody disrobing that's amusing. And so you can picture it in your mind.
Right.
And I thought that makes it even more fun and funny for people.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example of what we used to do.
This is a dramatic recreation.
It is time again for Take It All Off. We have someone standing by just outside the studio doors here. They understand the rules. They are to enter the studio. They are not to speak a single word. And they are then to disrobe in our studio. So, can we bring in today's guest, please? Oh, gosh, this is a great surprise. It is Senator Patty Murray. Senator Patty Murray is with us in the studio. Oh, don't say a word, Senator. You can't speak. But it is time for you to barrel. So, have at it. Here is Patty Murray. Wow. Would you be able to turn around a little bit? Ooh, you should have that looked at. Anyway, thank you, Senator. You can put your things back on now.
Don't forget your hat.
This has been a dramatic recreation.
Did she ever sue you for that?
Yes, several times.
Yes.
And now it is time to wrap this thing up and bring this cow into the barn, Lisa Foster.
Let's do it.
All right. Got a Jim Dandy for you. You know, it's like those other stories I was telling earlier. I probably have told this joke before, but it's good enough that it bears repeating. It's good enough that it bears repeating.
And you always have a different spin, so there's that. You never tell it the same way twice.
Here we go, Lisa.
All right.
Let's get this over. Let's have the joke.
Let's do the joke.
St. Peter got fed up with standing at the pearly gates, and it was his job as St. Peter to give or to deny access to heaven. And so Jesus came over and said, hey, Pete, why don't I take over for a little while?
Oh, that'd be great. Thanks, Jesus.
You're welcome. Well, presently, a man came up to Jesus now, who was standing at the pearly gates, and the man said, I'm looking for my son. He was an old man.
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed.
I'm looking for my son.
Is he old?
Yeah, he's old, yeah.
Okay,
I'm looking for
your son. Yeah, I know, I got it, says Jesus. And who are you, sir?
Well, I suppose I'm just about the closest thing my son has to a father.
Oh, that's why you call him your son. What do you do for a living, by the way?
Well, I suppose you could say I'm a carpenter.
Jesus gets excited now. And does your son have holes in his hands and his feet?
Yes, he does.
Jesus cried out, Father! And the old man said,
Pinocchio!
I don't think you have told that one before. I did not see that coming.
That should clear out the traffic for you, Miss Foster.
Now we're doing 110. This certainly was a race. Forever to pass a caddy would be a big disgrace. The guy was the one to pass me out. He's kept on tooting his horn. I'll show him that a Cadillac is not a car to scorn. Beep, 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 beep. His arm went beep, beep, beep. Now we're doing 120 as fast as I could go. The rapper pulled alongside of me as if we're going slow. The fella rolled down his window and yelled for me to hear.
Thanks for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.